brought to you by Carol Beck and broadcasting live from the Dallas Entrepreneur Center, The Deck at 311 North Market Street, Suite 200 in Dallas, Texas. It's time for Career Advancement Radio, providing information to help enhance your career. Now here's your host, Dr. Marilyn Carroll.
Good morning, Dallas, and I'm here this morning with Kamal, and we are excited to bring to you today those things that, when listed in your resume, help get you noticed if you have experience in them. So we found this article, and the article had about 10 things or 10, suggested 10 particular skill sets or areas that one must have or should be interested in having. Not all 10, but if you have a combination of two or three of them or more, it's likely to get you more noticed on the job application, through the job applicant process. So if you don't have these skill sets, we do recommend that you go out and decide which ones fit you and get a job around or get some experience or skill sets around that. And there are tons of schools. If you don't want a four-year degree, there are certainly community colleges around that can offer these particular items to you, or you can check with some of the trainings that are going on around the country and see if you can get in touch with one of them. Since they're not our sponsor, I cannot mention them, their names in particular, but I do think it's worth noticing. So, Kamal, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Excited to be here.
Good, good. Kamal looks just gorgeous this morning. Not that she doesn't look gorgeous every day. She's just, she has her hair up and the eyes are all done up and sparkling, and it's early in the morning. And I don't think we talked about morning and early and all of that a couple of shows ago. And so this morning I was thinking, let me get on up. It takes me about 2 hours to prepare. So I had to get up from what I was researching or writing and get started just meditating on how I was getting in by 8 this morning in order for us to get started on what we had to do. So are you excited about our topic?
I'm very excited about this topic. This is a very interesting one, and it's about 10 skills that you can learn in your spare time, which is it's a great article just because not every skill you have to have. You know, you have to learn, okay, which ones can I actually apply to my career?
Mm-hmm.
But just having knowledge that these different skills are out there and that they're very easy for you to learn outside in your free time or when you just kind of want to pick up something new, I think this was a very interesting article about how to go about that.
So who was the author of this article?
So this is by Trent Hamm, and the original 10 skills, they're published somewhere, I want to say Forbes.
Forbes magazine, that is correct.
And it's very nice what Trent did with this, because instead of just listing the 10 skills, he goes through and he kind of evaluates them, talks about what they are and why they're important and what you can kind of apply them towards.
Great, great. And so as we do always, we'll supply a link to that article so you can get additional ones in our write-up and our blog post after the show. So make sure you check out the article in depth. We're not going to go over every detail, but just from at the top of a glance, we're going to start with a lot of these and talk about them from our experience and knowledge. So SAS, a statistical analysis system. So SAS systems, a lot of people are afraid of stats. But however, in this day and time, we live in an era that numbers matter and information matters, and you must understand what that information is saying to you. SAS, I became familiar with SAS when going through my PhD, and we had to use SAS, a statistical analysis systems, in order to come up with proving our facts as to whether it was had any validity to it or not. And it's not really hard. There are systems out there. But of course, when you're in college, professors want you to know how to do it using Excel or a calculator or other particular systems to do. So don't be afraid of SAS or statistical analysis systems. And if you are in college, I really recommend that you really dive deep into this and use it for some of your life experiences. Maybe you want to, outside of what the professor has given you, you may want to go to a restaurant or something like that and ask, hey, I'd like to practice what I'm using in school and see, you know, if I can help you in some way. I think people would be more open. It costs money for a statistical analysis. And so while you have your hands on that, and in order to get practical experience with it, that's an excellent leeway. What do you think?
So, you know, like you mentioned, statistics are everywhere. It's everything, whether you're, you know, doing biostats or you're doing financial stats. Statistics you will find in pretty much any field that you're in. And what makes SAS so great is that this is a software suite. So kind of like Microsoft has its suite where you have Word, Excel, PowerPoint, all of those programs. SAS is a statistical suite in which you can go in and just find patterns and trends in data. And it really helps you dig deep into what the stats are saying, mm-hmm. what is actually being provided by your stats. So it helps. It's a great way to help you understand, organize, and really be able to read and understand what is happening with the stats that you're looking at.
Right. And so all of you math whizzes out there and non-math whizzes, this is, again, extremely important. And if you're good at math and you don't want to become a math professor or a teacher, you could always go into this particular area and work with systems like this, as well as work at a company, say a consulting firm, and opt to do something around statistical analysis. Okay. So data mining is akin to statistical analysis. You need statistical analysis in order to evaluate your data mining systems. The data mining systems are when you pull things together, say, let's see, I have 30 students, hey, in a class, and out of the 30 students, there's a seven, questions four, and questions two. I know I went backwards. And say that I wanted to see why I had a less of a pass rate on those four questions. I could use data mining to see if there was additional information on my students that would tell me something about them. Say, if this is a college setting, I could see what school did they go to previous, what high school, what area of the country did they come from? Did they come from this country at all? There's a lot of things you could do with data mining that could help you to pinpoint more of what you're talking about. I know in my job in financial services, I use data mining a lot to help me determine where to place my resources at the office. At one point, I had about 130, 40 people reporting to me across seven states. And it was kind of difficult to bring all that together and decide what to do. And so for me, instead of being relying on emotions, because when you're going through a downsizing like we were, I needed to use data mining to help me evaluate which way we needed to go and why we needed to go in that direction and what are the resources we needed. And I also used data mining to help me when I first got the job at the bank to help me determine what type of people I really needed to bring in that were going to be glue, stick to it, do a fabulous job, and be loyal to the situation. I didn't go by friendships. I went by who I could pull in that was going to do the job and to make the company look great, as well as the group look great, as well as themselves look great, as well as myself. As a leader, you always have to talk about yourself last or think about yourself last, but think about the other groups. So data mining is great. What about your thoughts?
So we live in a world where technology is everywhere. It pretty much runs everything. And with that comes a lot of data. You know, even if you're just looking at the internet as a whole, there is so much data. You know, when you go through, and even when you go through like servers and things like that, there's so much available. So data mining is a skill that is extremely important and is extremely needed, being able to really look at data and be able to, first of all, sift through it, see which is actually necessary, and then being able to understand what you have. It's just again, people who are good with numbers, this is where your skill set is going to come in so much handy. Everybody needs someone who can take data and look at mm-hmm. it and sift through it. And so, you know, data mining is a skill that is so necessary, but it's also very hard to find.
Yes, I think because people are intimidated by it because of math. Math, don't let the math intimidate you on the data mining. I think that the biggest thing that you can do with data mining is just to make sure that the information there, so that when you go to statistical analysis, you can take it a step farther. And like I said, there are systems and stuff in place that could help you tremendously with that. Okay. Search engine marketing. Now, this is an area that, oh my gosh, I would love some help with. But so if you are an individual, I remember meeting this young lady out. I was out at dinner one night and I was asking her, excuse me, what are you doing? And she said she worked for a law firm. And I said to her, so what do you do? And she says, well, it's really search engine marketing. But she gave it another name. I cannot for the life of me remember what was the name of the job, the title that she called it. But what she did was she would look on, she would do marketing from that perspective and go after new clients by using search engine marketing. And so I was like, okay, so you have to know more than marketing. You have to know how to really use the technology today, search engine, to see which other companies you really want to focus on so you can use your ad dollars in that way. You had any experience with this?
With search engine marketing, I actually have had a little bit of experience with this prior to coming to this gig. I actually worked for a company where we did marketing for a lot of mobile applications. Mm-hmm. And part of that came blogging. And with blogging, there are so many different kinds of blogs out there. So if you want people to see yours, if you want people to look at yours, you really have to take search engine marketing and search engine optimization to heart. Otherwise, who's going to be reading what you write?
Right.
And you know what I had to do to learn how to improve rankings and increase traffic is, you know, there are a lot of little things. It's the little details. So mm-hmm. things like improving keywords or putting more relevant keywords. A lot of people don't really remember that they exist, but those are some of the most important things, because when people are on search engines, a lot of the times what they type in are just keywords. Mm. So you want to put the most relevant keywords. You want to put the ones that are actually related to what you're talking about. And that, for example, will help it. Like it helps improve your presence.
Okay.
You know, and things like that. And again, for the most part, people try and improve their rankings on sites like Google. Google is the king of search engines, but you can't forget there's also Yahoo Search, there's Bing, there's MSN, things like that. So kind of understanding how each one works and what kinds of things they deem more relevant is also great to keep in mind.
So search engine marketing would be inclusive of these things.
Yes.
Okay, very good. So moving down to number four, which is data modeling. So how do you model the data? What is the data really showing us? I don't know. Did he give a definition of data modeling?
Yeah, he did. So data modeling is the practice of defining a way to organize information that describes something in a clear fashion that can later be searched, retrieved, and analyzed.
Wow. I think that's awesome. Data modeling would also be good for your resume.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
I think you can data modeling is actually something you do when you're in your grad school and you're writing papers, or even your last year in grad school when you do your final exit course. Data modeling is something you would actually know how to do if you happen to write that final paper or writing tons of papers in grad school. Also, data modeling would be good in a business to see what is it that I'm trying to search for. In the example we used at the top under SAS, or I use under data mining, was the mere fact that how I use the modeling to determine some type of modeling approach to determine who I needed, what type of staff member that I would need on staff to, or team member I would need on staff, in order to maximize our efficiencies. And that is so relevant. I would think everyone needs to have that skill set based on that definition. All right. Then contract negotiations. This here is something that men don't have a challenge with. Women, however, have a hard time with contract negotiations because they have a challenge with not being firm on, we have a challenge on not being firm on what it is we want and sticking with it. So contract negotiations, I say, if you're a female out there, please, please, please start looking at some of the articles on negotiations and how you negotiate and contracts, as well as if you are a male who has a hard time saying no, or had a hard time not believing or feeling concrete or sound about whatever product, service, or challenge that you're trying to get over to the next person without being verbally abusive or loud, and that goes for men and women. Contract negotiation is definitely a skill set to have in this day and time because people can be firm about what they're doing, smile about it and move on, and you don't know what just happened to you. Of course, there are some others that are just irate about things and you kind of just say, whatever, and let me go on with it. But you never want to lose a fight that's worth, not that you shouldn't lose. Meaning this, say you're in a meeting. Each week, the management team brings you in to meet, and they want to know your feedback on what your thoughts are about a particular area that they're discussing. And you constantly give in. Sooner or later, they will let you go because you don't have the wherewithal to negotiate at the table with the other parties to be able to map out the things that you need to say that bring positivity to that equation and believability to it. So positivity and believability are very important in contract negotiations. Now, some men will say, or males would say, that do a lot of contract negotiation for their business is forget about the niceness and all of that. Just get to the point and go, go, go. Well, in this day and time, depends on who you're dealing with. And if you're dealing with the younger generation, they don't take kindly to being threatened. So you have to work with them on a different level set and one that is more positive and lets them know what are the benefits to what you're saying so that they can make an informed decision about the items at stake on the table. What about with you, Kamal?
So for me, contract negotiation is a very interesting but necessary skill set to have in the sense that it is a very social skill set to have. You have to know how to act in certain social situations. And for example, like you mentioned, millennials, we don't take kindly to being threatened. A lot of the times we get two kinds of responses, either kind of a complete shutdown or kind of a vengeful side where we will provide a lot of backlash. Mm-hmm. Both are not ideal, mm-hmm. clearly. And so for me, with contract negotiation, you need to have a very diplomatic approach. You need to be firm, but cordial. And you cannot be a pushover. You can't let people walk all over you when it comes to contract negotiation. Otherwise, you haven't done your job well. This is not an easy skill to necessarily acquire without mm-hmm. experience. With the other skills, they're kind of things that you can learn and practice on with software or, you know, just taking any kind of data from online and working through it and things like that. But social skills such as this, you really need experience with other people. So when you're trying to practice this, it's much better to start off with people that you know very well.
Excellent point.
But people who will also let you know if something is going wrong. You know, I wouldn't necessarily want to practice this with someone like my mother, so to speak, because most of the time she knows how to shut down my arguments completely as a mother can. But, you know, this is something that I would definitely try out with my sister or with my friends or people who I know will give me very, very good critique and feedback.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. Of course, I have a mother that would, she'd be my worst critic. So I'd probably have to go with her as the individual to say something. And then I'd go with my kids because they will negotiate the heck out of something. They've been negotiating since they were born, I believe. So I'd have to go with that group. But at the same time, if I wanted something more professional, I'd have to go outside the family. So I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Software development, that is number six. So being able to develop software, if you're in that game, you're in that space, people want you at the table because things are so new. We've changed so much. We need a number of software development people. And so if you have that skill set, that is something you do have to go to school for. Some people learn it on their own and just know how to do it. But the people that are at the top in that have done schooling in that. I don't care who you go to, where you are. I don't care who started something. If you're an entrepreneur, you may have started things, but you had you some experts on the side. And that's one thing people have to remember. Have you experts in your area that help you to do things that you need to do? Don't try to do things all on your own. And that's what too many people will do. They'll come up with something. They think they've done something. I can make a cake in the kitchen, but I am no baker. It may taste good, but it does not have the best that's coming from it to be sellable to others. So I'm a firm believer in certain areas where you have to have schooling to ensure that you are doing the right things that's needed in order to, or have the right resources around in order to make that happen.
And I think with software development, this is something that every company, literally every company, is going to need. It's kind of like having a person who is an expert in finance. Every company needs someone who is mm-hmm. great with financials. And the thing about software development is that it is applicable to any field that you want to go into, whether you're going into medicine, if you're going into business, if you're going into another tech industry. Software development is something that people need because, again, it requires a much deeper level skill like coding, which not many people know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There is such a huge pool of people who cannot code. So having that coding experience, which comes with software development, for example, is something that people will really, really value. So being able to put software development on a resume automatically makes you a more valuable asset to the company.
Okay. I agree with that. And number seven, does he say about strategic project management? Does he say anything about that?
He does. So strategic project management is the management of a project so that it's fully in alignment with the overall vision and strategy of the business as a whole.
Hmm. Interesting. I knew that, but I just wanted to see what the thought process was here. Strategic in itself or strategy within itself is first there's a strategy and how does that strategy pan out? And project management, strategic project management as well as strategic planning, which is number eight, go hand in hand. For example, the strategic project is based on the strategic plan. So we have to be extremely careful. I can't hardly say a word that I have a degree in, but it's rough this morning. But I teach strategic planning. That is the course that I work with in business a lot. And you have to know the overall view or plan. What's going to happen before you start breaking it down into what's going to happen? What are the steps that need to take place? And I use strategic planning as well as I teach strategic project management because in that it helps people. You have to know the big view, and there's not enough people that have the big view and then are able to break it down into minute steps. And that's the challenge that we have. So when we see strategic anything on a plate, we know that those are high-level thinkers, high-level visionaries, high-level people who have pulled things together that in the end, you may not be able to see it, but others will see it once each step evolves and is implemented. So it's only for a certain, a certain group to kind of map out and see and go from there. I love this topic because, and teaching this course, obviously, because it just covers so much, but it could get tedious. It can get draining, especially when you're trying to pull something from someone else and establish, okay, what is it you're really trying to say? Because many times people don't know what it is they really want to do. And so it really takes an approach, almost like coaching, to sit back and say, you're saying that you want to go and jump across the river, but you haven't said why, and you haven't said what results that it's going to bring to you, so that when you jump across the river, we can help you map out that whole process of jumping across the river and to ensure that you're getting that feeling or that, I guess jumping indicates some kind of feeling you're going to get to me, but feeling or that after effect that you're looking for from jumping across the river. I think if you break this down even further to schooling or work, which is what this show is about, the whole work experience and bringing people together for careers and developing and building people, you have to have a plan. When you go to college, there is a plan. A lot of times people don't have number A, strategic planning outline, to know exactly what I'm going to do. It may not flow like that, but at least you know that you're going in the right direction in the right area. For example, and I'll make this quick, I never would have thought that coaching would have lasted so long with me. It was something I built in college. And it was and during my master's degree, I had to do a business plan. I had to do a strategic plan from a strategic project management perspective. And I had to build the whole thing out to see it from start to finish. Having that out there for years and years helped to build a reputation for me. I had to practice it. I had to do it. And I just took it on. It was something that I didn't think much about at the time, other than that it was needed. I tried to hand it off to other people. They wouldn't take it in because they couldn't see it. But for me, that was my vision, my process, my map, my plan. For the teacher, it worked perfectly. I made an A in the class. But for those that were not privy to that information and couldn't understand it, they just didn't do it. Go ahead.
Well, I think I kind of want to go back to the jumping across the river example that you gave.
Okay.
Just because it kind of made me think that with strategic project management, it's not always just about that final outcome. It's all about what are the other kind of beneficial add-ons to your outcomes. It's not always just about finishing that project of, hey, you know what? I've jumped across the river.
Exactly.
It's all about what are the other outcomes of that? You know, what is that going to mean? And so with strategic project management, you have to realize that you have to think about all the scenarios, all the possible outcomes. Are there going to be more pros or cons? Even if you finish that project in a certain way, yes, the project is done. But if it also leads to a lot more negative outcomes, maybe that's not the best way to go about
exactly.
something.
Exactly.
Maybe that's not the best way to, quote unquote, jump across the river. And that actually, I think, ties in very well with strategic planning, which is number 8, because it's kind of, you have to look at the big picture of the big picture. So when you're looking at strategic planning in general, it's kind of the umbrella topic. It's like strategic management becomes the little details now, and those little details make the new big picture.
Excellent way of putting it. I couldn't have done a better job. So good job.
Thanks.
So number 9 is technical skills. And as we know, technical skills is selling something that's in from a technology area. For example, it could be something as like a new product that's on the market or an app or something, and you're trying to get it across. Or let's see, something that's in the micro space, medical space, and you built this new application that's supposed to help doctors. You need to know how to sell that. You need to know about that product in order to understand how to get it over to that doctor. You need to know the technical functionality of it in order to be able to deliver that. And that's my thought process on that, is just knowing the technical aspects of how things work, that product work, not things, but that product work that you're selling, and how to deliver that in a way that gets the point directly across to those that you're selling that product to.
I definitely agree. Being able to talk about technical concepts and technical products to non-technical people is probably going to be your biggest asset when it comes to technical sales.
Yes.
So.
Okay. And our last one, as we wrap up our show today, is customer service matrix. Yes. Excuse me. So customer service matrix, kind of go back up to statistical analysis and data mining. Customer service matrix, how are we doing? So a lot of times we'll take the NPS. The NPS is a customer service ranking tool that evaluates customers' experiences in with a company or a particular product. And they tell us specific information. Many times in order to build the NPS survey, companies will take away those things that they say they deliver to the customer from their mission statement, or it could be from their vision or their strategy, their company's strategy. What is it that we want our customers to have? For example, from this show, we want our client base out there to have not only an educational product that is discussed openly and spent more than a minute on for a commercial space, but we want to take a deeper dive into something, not too deep. We don't want the show being more than 35, 40 minutes, but at the same time, we want to go more into it from a self-user or individual approach, that consumer approach that's out on the open market, and see how to evaluate that, as well as combining that with a thought leader or an educational person, as well as maybe even students in the marketplace as well, and the client. It would be great when we get a client at the table with us as well, because that three-pronged approach will deliver to the client something more useful than some of the advertisement that we see in the open market. And so we even have examples more of that, that has been more beneficial to clients to have this round table approach where everyone hears your client base, hears your round table discussion, and that potential client base as well. Once they hear it, they know, they make a decision on, do I want to work with that company or not? Because this is on the spot. We don't rehearse. We don't practice for it. We come in, we know what we're going to do. I mean, we know the topics we're going to talk about, but we haven't surveyed each other or practiced the conversation, and which is exactly what we would do with a client.
Okay. Well, I think that is actually a wonderful way of talking about customer service metrics. And I think the only thing that I really want to leave people with when it comes to this topic, and honestly, all 10 skills in general, is that data is everything. Do not be afraid of data. Yes, we know it is dense. Yes, we know there is so much of it out there, but the value that comes from knowing data and knowing how to read data and how to understand it and how to convey it, mm-hmm. Those are the skills that make you above and beyond valuable to a company. And so being able to put anything related to data on your resume, again, is going to be fantastic for you. So whether you're working with customer service data, whether you're working with, data mining or data modeling or any kind of data-related skill or job, mm-hmm. it's going to be very beneficial for you to understand how that works.
I totally agree, Kamal. And I would leave with this. Owning a... not only a career management company, but a company that helps employers find employees. I would say these are great to add to Kamal's comments. They're great, all great, but just make sure that when you put them there, you put them there because they're needed skill set for that particular job that you're applying for. Your resume is a resume for a particular situation. Not every situation needs all the content there. So watch carefully. Thank you for joining us today on our show. We look so forward to continued shows and future shows and working with you. And again, our sponsor today was Carol Beck. And with Carol Beck, they're a talent acquisition and consulting company. And they'd love to work with you on any of these particular things that we discussed here today. Kamal?
Well, you know what? I think you've said it all. So thank you so much for having me again.
You're welcome. Take care, guys.